This show was brought to you by Ouch My Ego. OuchMyEgo.com.
Hello, John.
Hey, how's it going?
It's all right, I guess. It's 2017 as of when this airs, and things are looking weird.
Oh, that's an understatement with this one.
Yeah. What is this one? What did we just watch?
This is John Dies at the End.
So you guys are what? Spiritualists? Exorcists?
Something like that.
Great changes are coming to the world. You'll see it with your own eyes.
What the f***?
From the creator of Bubba Hotep.
John!
John dies at the end.
Somewhat ominous, considering my name.
Yeah, but it's the different spelling of your name.
That's true. That's true.
First off, this movie is based on a novel that was a serialized, at first, short story, I guess, that just sprawled into a bigger thing on, I do believe, the Cracked message boards.
The writer is one of the editors from Cracked.
Yeah. Two of the characters are actually named after writers on Cracked,
the main writer. Yeah.
David
His
Wong.
Pen name. Yes.
And John Cheese. John Cheese is the guy who dies. Anyway, he got a book deal, so they took all that stuff down, turned it into a book, released it, and there's another book following this called This Book is Full of Spiders. I haven't read any of that. I've read some of the John Dies at the End, and it is also just as weird as the movie.
Yeah, I am very curious after seeing this. I am curious to actually read the novel, because I know that the movie is only about half of what's actually in the book, so there's other tales that happen to these characters as well.
Ah, that much I didn't know, because I didn't get that far into the book. So, the movie, let's go for it. You tell me.
Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that happens with this, but everything kind of starts actually with a kind of like a pre-credit little deal where they kind of give us the Theseus paradox scenario in which...
Yeah.
Solving the following riddle will reveal the awful secret behind the universe. Say you have an axe, just a cheap one from Home Depot. You use said axe to behead a man, and you're chopping off his head because even with 8 bullet holes in him, you're pretty sure he's about to spring back to his feet. Eat the look of terror right off your face. You now have a broken axe. So, you go to the hardware store. The repaired axe sits undisturbed in your house until the next spring, when one rainy morning... So, you grab your trusty axe and chop the thing into several pieces. On the last blow, however, of course a chipped head means yet another trip to the hardware store. As soon as you get home with your newly headed axe, though, you meet the reanimated body of the guy you beheaded last year. So you brandish your axe.
That's the axe that slayed me.
Is he right?
The answer is no. No, it's not. It isn't. It's not a paradox. How is that a paradox?
Well, Doctor Who did a version of this where they talk about what if one of Beethoven's symphonies falls through time, young Beethoven, before he wrote it, finds it, and then sends it out as his own creation. Who wrote this Beethoven symphony?
Old Beethoven.
Did he?
The old Beethoven is the guy who lost it or sent it out, right?
No, it's just saying the symphony itself, say even from modern day, falls through time.
Okay.
But young Beethoven
picks it
up. So
that's different. That's totally different. That is a paradox, because then we don't know.
Exactly.
We can't say. But the axe we can say. That's not the same axe.
Yeah.
So I watched that and I was like, okay, it's presenting it to... us as a conundrum, but it's not really that much of a conundrum. But the first time I watched it, I was like, oh, head scratcher, huh? No, not really. Not the second time. I was like, no.
My thought was just, doesn't really matter. It's a zombie skinhead. Kill it.
Well, that's true too. But that sets up kind of the weirdness of it.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
That's the purpose for it, right?
Pretty yeah. much. It's the idea to kind of get your head to start opening up and be ready for strangeness that's going to ensue. More so than the actual real paradox. It's
right.
Just,
yeah.
Okay, we are going to get you weird before we get weird.
Right. And it gets really weird. So then what?
Okay. So David is sitting in this Chinese food restaurant, and this reporter played by Paul Giamatti shows up.
Barney Blondstone. Sorry, I'm late.
And he begins to tell his story. First telling something a little bit more of a modern tale in which he and John go and find this place. Kind of hired by
yeah,
this girl
to... Yeah, they're ghost hunters, basically.
Yeah, they find this meat monster and strange things happen.
So this meat monster It's a spirit that's possessing a bunch of meat in a freezer. But when I saw this, I was like, hey, wait a minute. There's no possible way they could have seen what I drew so many years ago, which was a meat monster fighting a comic book character that I created called Cheese Boy. It's stupid. It's dumb all the way. But I had a thing called a meat bot, and it looked very similar to what was in the movie, except the movie had a turkey, a whole cooked turkey for a head, and mine was a ham. And that's just about the only difference. So I'm just like, oh, well, mine didn't have fish on it either. And the movie had frozen fish. But yeah, I was scratching my head when I first watched that. But I wasn't upset or nothing. But I was like, geez, the ideas that we have.
Everything kind of comes together. Just weird things. Someone else will have it. And if you're not ready, someone's going to throw it in a movie before you.
It's fine. They actually made it flesh, so to speak. And I'm pretty happy with that. Even though there's no possible way they could have seen it. I didn't publish this stuff. So I found it to be rather interesting. But the meat monster is confusing the two lads. Like, it's confusing us.
It thinks that they are this guy named Marconi, who's played by Clancy Brown.
Yes.
That's his nemesis. That's who he's wanting to find. They have the guy on speed dial, because they work in the same circles.
Paranormal investigation.
Yeah, so they call him up, and he apparently just says a couple of words to the creature, and the creature explodes.
Yeah, meat everywhere. John tries to leave. He goes, runs upstairs, and the door handle turns into a penis.
Yeah, and they can't escape now. Or at least they could. Or at least they could, I mean, if they watched the
fondle. If he just got over it. Okay, put it this way. A door handle turns into any fleshy anything. You don't want to touch it.
Well, these guys kind of are dude bros.
Yeah.
So anything that
honestly, John is a dude bro.
Yeah, I know.
David's not that dude bro. David's just normal guy, kind of. I really like the actor. I actually like both of the actors, but the actor who plays David is really spot on and very dry. I like his performance. So they can't get out that way, and then they realize that the girl that they were talking to is a ghost.
Yeah,
she looks different to either of them.
They're seeing different things, and when they confront her about it, she explodes into a pile of snakes.
Yeah.
That also prevents them kind of from escaping, too.
Right. But then what?
Well, after that, it kind of cuts back to the diner and the
interview, right.
He's not buying it. So Dave has to prove that he's real by doing some things where he's talking about how change that's in his pockets.
Yeah, all these like cold reading sort of magic tricks, like Chris Angel sort of things.
But a little more so because it gets
really specific. He tells them about dreams and stuff.
Yeah.
But still, you could consider that cold reading, which is why the guy's a skeptic. Why he's like, yeah, no. So he starts telling him this story about John playing in a band at a party, and there's some dreadlock magician guy doing similar tricks.
Kind of weirds Dave out because he's, again, being somewhat specific about your last dream that you had was this.
It's funny because in the scene previous with Paul Giamatti is in the skeptic role, and then the next scene, which is a flashback basically, David's in the skeptic role.
Yeah.
And the magician's name is Robert Marley.
Yep. An alias, funny. Of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the party kind of ends. Dave is leaving. He runs into this girl who has...
She's an amputee. She has no hand.
She's looking for a dog because her dog bit the Rastafarian dude, and dog's just kind of disappeared. And right before Dave leaves, he ends up finding the dog.
Yeah, so the dog's been hanging out with them from that point on.
Yeah, dog named Barkley.
Barkley dog, yes. I don't understand this soy sauce stuff, where it came from. It's the drug that Robert Marley is pushing, because he's a drug dealer.
It's that thing where you kind of go, it opens the doors of perception. It's...
Yeah.
You could sit there and use that as, oh, it's LSD.
It's something like that, but except before you start hallucinating, they start like flying around like they're flies and stuff.
Well, it's LSD if H.P. Lovecraft wrote about doing LSD.
Ancient space drugs.
Exactly. It's a living thing. It either will kill you or it will whatever.
Enhance?
They use the word choose because it is a living entity in itself. So it's choosing these two knuckleheads to do,
You know what? You said knuckleheads. And that's an extremely appropriate descriptor for these two guys.
Yeah.
Knuckleheads. I mean, they're not the dumbest guys. Somewhat charismatic, too, but they're knuckleheads. That works. Good.
But so, the next morning, because it's like 3 in the morning, Dave gets a call from John, who's completely, like, out of his mind. He's sounding completely paranoid.
John, what's going on?
I can't get out of my apartment.
What?
I'm scared, Dave. I mean, he can't can't be real. It can't be the way that it moves, the way it's made. This is not a product of any kind of evolution or anything, but it still managed to bite me.
What?
Can you come over?
Yeah, I'll be there in 12 minutes.
In Zertina's apartment, Dave finds a syringe filled with this black goo.
Yeah, which is the soy sauce, right. That's what, okay, so I keep saying soy sauce, but that's what they call it in the movie, in the book.
But yeah, so he finds this, and he's freaking out. He's saying there's a creature here, and we don't see it. Well, we see it. Dave doesn't. It's like weird fleshy spider monster.
Yeah, it's bizarre. It looks like paper mache, really. It looks so cheap, and which is actually fine. I think it's deliberate. Anything that's in this movie is deliberately done this way. Partially because it's a super low budget movie. The other reason is, like, if it's such a super low budget movie, let's just go with how cheap it is. That's going to be part of the joke. Because this movie isn't just a bunch of weirdness and, well, it is a bunch of weirdness, but it isn't just that without charisma and humor.
It's a horror comedy. I mean, there's humor all abound in this film, but it's also...
It's so dry.
Yeah, it's like all off-kilter. Again,
a lot of nonsense, really.
Kind of throw the Lovecrafter out there. There's kind of these underpinnings of that as well, although it's not necessarily elder gods or anything like that.
No, it's not, but it is that strange otherworldly menace.
Yeah, strange cult are kind of in here. Creatures infesting human beings, that kind
right.
of stuff.
So the drug is from Planet X, wherever that is. But isn't Planet X a conspiracy theory thing?
It is, but they only say Planet X like kind of as a descriptor, not so much that it's a Planet X. Jumping ahead a little bit, we do visit an alternate Earth.
Sure.
But it's not a separate planet. It's just otherworldly.
Yeah, which is another thing that Coscarelli, also we didn't mention, Don Coscarelli directed this and adapted it for the screen. He's the creator of Phantasm, so he likes this alternate portal dimension stuff. And I couldn't help but notice that some of the moments in this were somewhat Phantasm-y, in particular just the portal stuff.
Well, the portal thing and also the soy sauce bugs, how they were kind of flying around.
Oh, yeah.
Makes you think of the spheres from Phantasm.
Yep, definitely. This absolutely has more humor to it than any of the Phantasm movies had intentionally. Some of the Phantasm movies are hilarious without intending to be, in particular the third one.
In a way, and this there's no basis to this thought, but in a way it kind of feels like after him doing Bubba Hotep and hanging out with Jorah Lansdale, kind of seems like that's where that sense of humor kind of came from for this film. Because they, even though they're totally different writers, there's definitely a thematic humor that resides in both stories.
Sure. Doug Jones shows up.
Yeah, there's a couple things before Doug Jones shows up, and it's always good to see him not buried under 50 layers of things.
Right. Doug Jones, you all probably know, but we're going to say it anyway. Abe Sapien in the Hellboy movies, most of all the monsters in any Guillermo del Toro movie. Yeah. The Silver Surfer is the only good part of that movie. That's Doug Jones. He's a suit performer and a monster actor, and he's awesome. And he's pretty great as himself, too. He's very distinct look.
Well, right before that happens, Dave takes John out to a cafe, and while he's sitting there with him, Dave gets a phone call from John.
Yeah.
Dave? It's me.
Is this a recording?
What? No. Look, I don't know if we've talked tonight, but we don't have much time. I think I called you and told you to come here. If so, don't do it. If I haven't called, then obviously you should just stay away regardless.
Who is this?
It's John. Can you hear me?
I hear you and I can see you. You're sitting right here next to me.
Well, then just talk to me in person then. Oh, wait. Do I look like I'm injured in any way?
What?
Shh. Sorry, I gotta go. Say hello to me.
It seems like it's John from the future.
Oh, right. All the John phone calls, and he says that, you know.
You know what I think? You're gonna be getting phone calls from me for like the next 8 or 9 years, all from tonight.
Dave is starting to notice, something's going on. Something's wrong. So he calls a priest, played by
Angus Scrimm, the tall man from Phantasm.
And in talking with this guy, he accidentally injects himself with the soy sauce.
But let's just suppose that I actually, in reality, ran into something from beyond the...
Oh!
I'll try to explain this without cursing, but the black from Planet X that came out from that mother looked like it had grown hair. Did I mention that the stuff was moving? Twitching?
And then that's when Doug Jones shows up and attacks him with a leech.
Yeah, it's like a slug and a leech at the same time. It's weird. Should I say it's weird? Because, is that a given? I think it's a given.
Yeah, at this point, from this point on, everything is weird.
Yes.
So we're just going to say things, and we're all going to just sit there and go, that's weird.
Yeah, if I ever say, that's weird, I'll probably just cut it out. Okay. Well, the detective shows up like immediately after that, out of nowhere, steps on the slug.
Yeah, just pops up and arrests them both. And while in custody, John dies.
Yes. But it's not at the end, so this movie is a false advertisement. It's like in the middle.
They lie.
John dies in the middle.
But Nuz catches John dies at the end, though. But yeah, so while in custody, Dave again gets a phone call from John.
Yeah, says leave.
Has him escape.
There's still a guy in here with me. Another cop.
No, there's not. Check the mirror.
I don't get it.
He's not real, Dave. Well, not in the traditional sense. Just go. Just walk out, okay? You're gonna start seeing things like this from time to time, and it's important that you not freak out.
So, you can't hurt me, right?
Well, I'm pretty sure he can.
Yeah, and the mustache of that guy flies off his face and starts attacking David as well.
And he tears off the guy's arm, and once he finally escapes the room, like, he's holding this guy's arm around his neck. Well, the neck is throttling him, but
yeah.
He gets out, and all of a sudden the arm is gone, and everything is normal.
Everything's back sort to of. Normal. Then he goes, walks down the street, he's talking on this broken phone, and then John tells him to buy a bratwurst.
And this is my favorite part of the entire film.
It is? The bratwurst? It's pretty good.
There's a hot dog guy about maybe half a block ahead. You see him?
Okay.
Buy a bratwurst from him.
Okay. I have the bratwurst.
Put it up to your head.
I'm going to have to ask you why, John.
I have to show you something. Dave, can you hear me?
All right. I get it. Okay, I can hear you through some kind of psychic vibration or whatever and not the phone. Okay, I get it. Okay, you could have just told me that.
See, the only reason that you can hear me is because you had some of the soy sauce in your system from the syringe. But it's not very much, and it's not going to last very long.
What is that stuff, John? The sauce. It was alive.
This is why this is my favorite part of the film. It's not because he's being talked to the bratwurst. It's because he spends the rest of the entire scene holding the thing to his head.
Right.
Except for the time where he's told to look to see if there's a $100 bill in it.
I don't have any cash. I had $5. I just spent $3 of it on the bratwurst.
That bratwurst cost $3? Holy crap, okay. All right, give me a second. Okay, check between the sausage and the bun. You should find a $100 bill rolled up in there.
There's no money in the bratwurst. It's just a piece of lettuce.
Okay. Have your ATM card?
I object to lettuce and bratwurst. Like, why would there be lettuce and bratwurst? There would be no lettuce with bratwurst. If there is lettuce with bratwurst, you're eating your bratwurst wrong. I know this. This is a thing I know. So this is just... They could have said a pickle. I don't know. It's just a pickle. But lettuce, that's bizarre to me. That's weird. None of the rest of the movie is weird. Just the lettuce.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Out of anything that's strange that precedes this or follows it, that'll be the weirdest.
That's the weirdest thing in this film, is the lettuce and the bratwurst.
Since he's now talking to a hot dog, tells him to go to...
Robert Marley's place.
Yeah, in which then he finds these two soy sauce pills.
Wait, and there's a brain in an aquarium or something like that.
Yeah, that too.
What the heck was it?
Well, there was a thing. It was kind of a creature, and it had like a tail that left, biomechanical thing, sort of kind of David Cronenbergian, like the end of the fly sort of creature.
Did it look like a brain to you?
Yeah, I do think it had a brain. But that's all the things that we've seen, a couple of creatures that are very similar to that, because that's the thing that was hanging out on the ceiling.
So you think it's something like that one? Like the spider thing?
Like the spider thing, or that thing that Dave has in the cage in his truck.
That's the same thing as the spider thing.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that they're all like the same sort of creature.
Okay.
But, well, it's also, he has in that place, there's also a TV that shows him the future.
Right.
Because he sees the detective show up and shoot him.
Yep, in the freezer is a tiny little canister the size of a cork of the soy sauce. And it's just two soy sauce pills, and they, as you said, fly into his face.
Yeah, come to life, and instead of him taking the pills, they take him.
One gets into his mouth, the other one gets into his cheek. Just bores itself into his cheek. But they sprout wings and fly to do this. This stuff sounds like I'm just making it up as I'm going along.
We got Mad Libs, and that's all I've got. Just Mad Libs in front of me, and I'm just filling it out.
And surprisingly, what you and I are saying are kind of gelling in a strange way, almost as if it's a written book and it's not Mad Libs. Interesting.
Okay, as you said, the detective shows up. The night before, he saw some really crazy things, including a dude covered in some kind of weird tiny flies or something. We never really clear what it is, but it seems like it's devouring him. And then he goes out, he grabs a shotgun, then he grabs like a can of mace, goes back in, and the guy who's being eaten alive is, you know, all well and good.
And that guy's name's Justin White.
Yeah, he's,
am I right?
Yeah, he's this wannabe gangster guy we briefly see at the party the night before.
Now, I know a guy named Justin White. He doesn't look like this homie guy. He, you know, this Justin White in the movie is very much like Orange County, Long Beach White gangsta guy.
Yeah, it's that.
It, like, it looks like he likes to surf, but also he wants to, like, roll with the homies type of thing. And he talks like that, too. But Justin White that I know is a cartoonist, and he doesn't at all look like that guy. Just wanted to drop his name, Justin White. I dropped it.
So the cop is there. He's going to burn the entire place down because he's seen all this horrible stuff happen. There's blood on the couch and all these. Apparently there were a bunch of dead bodies at one time the night before. And since Dave has apparently something to do with this, he's going to kill Dave.
I don't really know why he's going to try to kill him.
Part of it's because, and it's revealed a little bit later, that he has taken soy sauce as well.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, right. Because of the there's people that are chosen or people that are afflicted by, and the afflicted by are those little tiny flies that you're talking about.
Yeah, they're incubators for these
swarms. Yeah. The chosen ones are people who are enlightened by it, and that only happens to a few people. But there's a freak bullet involved. This is how he leaves unscathed.
It's like he goes back in time to when the bullet is being manufactured and distracts the guy pressing the bullets, and a fly gets trapped in there, so it basically just turns that specific bullet that's fired at him is now a dud of some kind.
And it just bounces off of him.
Yeah, which, not like it became a rubber bullet or anything.
I would like this scene to be myth busted.
Yeah, somehow I call bull on that. I don't claim to be an expert in these sorts of areas, but there's something about that that just doesn't seem... You're going to talk about the bratwurst being the weirdest thing? There you go, the magic bullet that that can that turns to a rubber pellet.
Or something?
Yeah.
I don't know. Did it bounce off of something in his pocket and they just cut that scene for your time? I don't know.
Yeah, because he does fall backwards. So there's some sort
of... Yeah, well, it hits him. It has impact. Yeah. It's like somebody punched him in the chest. After the freak bullet thing, it's revealed that the soy sauce is an alien race that's going to take over the Earth in 90 days.
Well, it can. It has the potential.
Or can, potentially, because that's the last planet that it took over. It took 90 days for it to happen. 90 what days? That planet's days? Earth days? We don't know.
Yeah, it's just kind of John knows this because he knows
it. Oh, John's still dead by this time.
Yeah, he's...
John's been dead this whole time since...
When
he died in the police precinct.
Yeah, when Dave escapes from the hospital, John asks him if he can steal John's body, which he can't. And also one of the other best things about this film is how Dave escapes this burning building. He's almost run over by his truck, which is being driven by Barkley.
Barkley is what, a golden retriever?
Yeah.
So they're perpetually happy looking dogs. So it's really funny. It's kind of like, it's a real dog sitting behind the wheel, but it's in a Toonces the cat sort of way.
Yeah.
It's really adorable, actually.
And, well, that's John speaking through Barkley, and that's how we find out about the parasites and all that stuff.
Yeah. So Justin White, he shows up?
He shows up in Dave's apartment and kidnaps Dave along with the other survivors of the night before where everybody was apparently...
Well, because the night before everybody died, right?
Everybody except a couple people who were missing.
Yeah, and it was sort of like a massacre-looking thing. There were guts all over the place.
Yeah, and so you have, what's her name, Anne. We have the Asian dude from the party.
Fred.
Yeah, Fred. And we have John, who seems to be alive, just kind of catatonic.
Yeah. In the back of a van, right?
Yeah, and they're being driven to this mall that apparently has a doorway to this alternate world.
It can only be accessed by somebody who has phantom limb.
Yep, because it's
a ghost hand.
It's a phantom door.
You know, I don't want to be callous or anything, but I do, if I ever suffer anything on me, amputated, a leg, a toe, a hand, if that happens, I do hope that I have a ghost limb. I don't know what I would do with it, I mean, but...
It would be there.
Yeah, it would be there. How can I haunt somebody with my ghost limb? Just hold it slightly closer to them and, like... Think that I'm wiggling my fingers, hope that it touches their hair, or what? What? I don't know. Stop touching me, I'm not. Except my ghost hand is. I don't know, it's just stupid. Sorry. That's stupid.
So they get to this mall, they just wants them to open the door for him, and a package is there that we had seen the shipping form for earlier in John's apartment.
Yeah.
Which was being shipped to this place at this time, and it just has a note inside saying, John, go outside and look by the trash can. This lures Justin outside where our police detective blows his head off.
All bloody and gross. So since this is, I don't know, this shouldn't even be technically a horror movie, because it's not horrific at all, but it is one of those things that It has gore in it. It's science fiction, but it's not science at all. It's nonsense, but there are horror-ish themes.
Yeah, it's like it's elements of it, but it's not scary. Nothing's jumping out at you. Nothing. You're not dreading anything at any point.
And there's no suspense. That's one thing about this movie. It has zero suspense. You're just going, okay, I'm going with these guys. I am now in this next scene with these guys.
Yes, it's very loosely constructed. Things just kind of happen. There's a ton of plot in this film. A lot of things happen in an hour and 40 minutes. But at the same time, it all just kind of happens.
Yeah, it kind of just moseys.
Yeah, it's dream logic almost, where you're just kind of like, okay, now we're
doing
this.
That's exactly it. You said it. It's dream logic. When you dream and you try to explain the dream, that's what this is like. It just doesn't really make sense to a person who can't experience that same dream. Now, you guys can all experience this movie. You can watch it. It's on Netflix right now. But if you're just trying to rely on us, yeah, it doesn't work. Hopefully this episode's going to be cut together nicely, but I see the struggle that at least I'm having with talking about this.
Yeah, there's so much weirdness, as we've said many times, in this film that it's just, you could put a dartboard of concepts up, throw darts at it, and you probably will get what's happening in this film, just from the weird random happenstance.
That might be really interesting, the dartboard concept, and then you have to connect. You have to. The rules are you have to connect that thing that the dart hit to that thing that the dart hit. You have to make them work together. That does seem like possibly a way that this story was written. I doubt it was, but I mean, it seems like it.
Yeah, there's definitely some madness of just, yeah, I'm going to randomize elements and write a story based on that. So now we got cop has shown up. He's going to kill everybody. Well, either kill or arrest. It's kind of hard to tell because he gets him in the car at gunpoint. And
well, no, the cop is...
The swarm shows up.
Well, the cop is like starting to come around to those guys. He's like,
sounds like you and I both got long stories to tell. I've been up 48 hours straight. This case ain't getting no clearer.
And then his eyes blow up, and then his face explodes.
He's also one of the many swarms of weird white whatevers they
but
are.
But he's lasted longer than the others.
And so it takes over Fred. Fred gets killed, and they blow him up along with the truck, so all these little things should hopefully be dead. Then they decide to go through the portal.
Now, this is the part where I found it really odd how they decided to do this. They used a lot of CG stuff when I thought perhaps going a practical route would have been better, because none of it is married together very well. And I can imagine just doing a composite with a fade on the ghost hand opening the door, a real practical door handle, with somebody on the other side of the door, special effects wise, turning it so it looks like it's turning with the hand. You know what I mean? I can imagine it being done that way, because it has been done that way years ago in the analog special effects days, and it looked better.
Weirdly enough, it probably would cost more money to do it that way than to just do a bad special effect.
You think so?
That's what it seems like with some of these things, where just practical effects would look better, but I'm sure it would end up costing more than the budget would allow.
Okay. So they go in and they meet Doug Jones again.
They meet him there, but he doesn't really do anything because Marconi shows up with the two assistants.
That's right.
And Marconi is Doug Jones's people's main ally in our world.
Yeah, yeah. He's there to kill this dude named Korok, which Doug Jones had mentioned before.
Yeah, the creature that's voiced by the great Kevin Michael Richardson.
Who is that?
He's a voice actor. You have heard his voice in almost anything in the last, 10, 15 years. Basically, you name a cartoon, he's voiced it.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so they get into the portal, and they're in this alternate world where people wear masks.
And nothing else. Not necessarily nothing else, but there's men and women, topless at least.
To ease their transition.
here's naked people.
They decided, here's half naked people. It'll make you feel better.
Now, in the credits, it says Daniel Roebuck is in this movie. And for the longest time, I couldn't spot him. Because he's wearing a mask. It dawned on me that he plays this guy named the Large Man, and he's just the guy who speaks for that weird cult of naked people.
And this guy takes him to this church, which has David Jonathan prophesized 20 years ago to arrive, and so there's an entire church that has them on there. Dave holding the bratwurst to his head. John, I don't remember what he's doing. I think he's got a shotgun.
Yeah, and they're stained glass portraits.
Yeah.
Sorry, the bratwurst. I like it.
Yes, and John is really happy because in one of them, it looks like his package is really big.
Wait, who's Cyrus Rooney?
Cyrus Rooney is the guy who, in this alternate Earth, everything is going fine, similar to our world. And then at one point in like the 1800s, this guy named Cyrus Rooney is born. In our world, he dies like age 17. But in their world, he ends up creating these living computers. First one out of like a pig's head, and then graduates to much more complex computing from that point on. And he's the one who, the day that he died, his greatest computer gained sentience, and that became Korok.
Clarity. Thank you.
Yes, and now Korok not only has enslaved this world, he's trying to branch out to other worlds.
Okay, so Korok and Jet Li from The One, they have the same goal, sort of, branch out. Well, I guess not.
No, Jet Li wants to be The One, he wants to become the most powerful being in the multiverse.
Yeah, well, and...
This thing just wants domination.
Yeah, Korok would dominate the multiverse too, but are there other Koroks? No, probably not. Just him.
Probably not, no.
So you wouldn't be absorbing all the other Koroks like Jet Li would be absorbing Jet Li. So I guess, but it's still interesting to me. I would like to see that all-powerful Jet Li go up against weird old monster Korok. Flesh computer?
Yeah, just this giant... fleshy, and this is the thing that definitely looks the most Lovecraftian of the entire film.
Yeah, you're right.
Is these cultists take them to see Korok, and then the only way to make Korok better is to feed people to it. And so the idea is they'll feed Dave and John to it, and they will now understand how to get between worlds.
Right. And how do you do that? The dog.
Yeah, but the dog ends up following them through it. We don't notice it, but the dog follows them through and is the one who's actually prophesied to destroy Korok.
And the dog knows what to do.
Yeah, Marconi, I don't know if we had mentioned it, but Marconi gives them a bomb that may not destroy Korok, but was going to do some damage to him or make him high or something. The way that they phrase it's a little strange.
He cannot be destroyed by conventional means, but I have a plan.
It is called the Tripper.
And it came from where, exactly?
This is an experimental Cold War weapon designed to take down a city the size of Moscow. Contained within this detonator is a block of C4 explosive, surrounded by a highly potent military-grade hallucinogen.
You think? A little strange?
Well, I guess no more stranger than anything else in this movie. They're fighting, trying to get this bomb to go off. Things aren't going their way. They escape almost to a point where it's, oh my god, the bomb has stopped. We need to stop it. Dog comes in and lets it off and saves the universe.
Cut back to the conversation with Paul Giamatti.
Giamatti is now completely just flabbergasted. He is ready to blow this thing wide open. And Giamatti reveals that he's actually a black man.
But he's not. He's Paul Giamatti.
Yes.
But of course, this ties into the very first ghost encounter.
Should have known. Describe yourself to me, Arnie. Physically. Tell me what you look like. Because to me, you're not black, Arnie. To me, you're a sloppy white guy in a rumpled corduroy jacket with a tape recorder.
Go out to the trunk, and there's an older black man in the trunk, and he's like, look, sorry.
This is my fault, Arnie. I projected you. It's the soy sauce. It's the one thing it lets me do. And you know how when you talk to someone on the phone, you sort of imagine what they look like based on their voice? Well, when you got killed, you immediately assumed the shape of what I...
This can't be. I can't. I don't accept it. I refuse to believe that I'm only here because I popped out of your imagination.
And then he's gone because there's nothing else that he can do. He's just essentially a figment of Dave's imagination.
Kinda, yeah. Sort of. If that makes sense, it doesn't. It doesn't make sense.
And that's kind of where the movie ends.
But the epilogue is him playing basketball. This is all throughout the credits.
David John find, as they're playing basketball, this sphere just kind of sitting
there.
Uh-huh,
another sphere. This time a big black sphere, but it's a sphere. And this is actually produced by, what, Sphere?
Silver Sphere.
Yeah, that's it. Silver Sphere. Like so it's totally... I think that's like his thumbprint in his movie.
They go into it. Yeah, they end up going through this sphere, and it's another alternate Earth that's been ravaged by what we can assume to be Korok's forces.
And there's these two cops that show up, or officials of some sort. They look like space cops or something.
Have Human this Liberation
big,
Front or something.
Long greeting... and they just keep talking, and John and David leave. They say, we gotta go back home and get some stuff. We'll be back. It's cool.
And they leave, and they're never coming back.
Do you think they're never coming back?
No. They're not coming back. The way John just kind of
binds his hand
like the guy's talking.
Yeah. I don't know. I was hoping that they would come back, but...
It's an open-to-interpretation ending at that point, so it's, I guess, depending on your feeling on human nature.
Well, look, see, the reason why I think that they would be up for it is that they were up for all this other stuff in the first place. I mean, David was the most reluctant, and then he was like, fine, okay, I'll go with it eventually. And it wasn't like the most difficult teeth pulling for him. It was just like, okay. Once he got past the encounter with this soy sauce in his face, he was just like, oh, okay. So that's halfway point through the film. Then he's not resisting as much.
Yeah, I just look at it and just kind of look at it and go, nah, they aren't coming back. More or less, they only care about their own. And kind of like, hey, that's not my problem. Not my backyard.
Now, do you think that this movie, maybe the story in general, too weird for the sake of too weird?
As presented in this film, it definitely comes off as just almost weirdness for the sake of weirdness. But then there are some stories, I think, because of that, they play better, you know?
Now, do you think that this movie works? Or do you think that it suffers under all the weirdness?
I think it works. It's one of these films where you kind of hear my hemming and hawing stuff, trying to formulate how you can say things with this. Because it's such a bizarre film. Its structure is off. Everything about it just kind of happens. You really have to be someone who likes weird stuff to even want to try this.
Yeah, that's true. Now, I think it's pretty sincerely made. I think there's a sincerity to it, which is better than just being a weird movie for the sake of weirdness. It's not the most artistic film.
No, but
it is still a lower budget film. But it, I think, is the most creative thing I've seen
Coscarelli do. Yeah, and it definitely feels visually. Like it's... Not only is it something that isn't in his wheelhouse, it's definitely... He didn't just phone this one in. But then again,
no, it seems like he's got some of his heart involved in it. I think he also had fun. I think they all had fun making it. Paul Giamatti was really behind
this. One of the producers. This film definitely feels like everybody's here to have fun. Everyone is on board, and it's just, let's go for a bizarre, interesting ride.
I can't say it's a full success. I've seen it twice now. I enjoyed it about the same both times. It's not one that gets worse, and it's not one that gets better. So my opinion about it from the first time watching it is about the same as my opinion this time, which is,
it's
all right.
It's entertaining. Sometimes that's all you need.
If you're not into the weird and strange, you're not gonna like it. It just won't.
Yeah, it's definitely not a film for everybody. But again, if it's the strange that you're interested in, this will definitely give you some strange.
Yep. So we're going to try to find more, obviously. That's what the show's about. Next time, I don't know what I'm going to make you watch, Joan.
We'll see. We'll see what happens. There's always something showing up that's...
Always. So thanks for digging into this, trying to unpack it. It's kind of difficult.
Yeah, I'm glad I gave myself a second pass at this, because I had seen it once years ago, couldn't remember anything about it, and in watching it, it almost was like watching it for the first time.
Exactly. This is why my opinion's the same. It's, you know? That's crazy.
Exactly.
So, good night, everybody.
Good night. Have a good one, man.
You're eating your bratwurst wrong.